George Soros, billionaire philanthropist, addressed students and faculty at the University of Pennsylvania on April 8, 2002.
I find the foreign policy of the Bush administration exceedingly dangerous. Although the terrorist threat is real and we must defend against it, we are going about it the wrong way. What makes the situation so dangerous is that nobody dares to say so. The nation is endangered, therefore it's unpatriotic to criticize our leader. That is not what has made this country great. The strength of this country lies in the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and the freedom of speech and thought.
In the weeks leading up to the one-year anniversary of 9/11, GNN approached nine people who have dedicated themselves to investigating how and why the United States was attacked that September day. We asked them 11 questions. Unanswered question number one. To what extent should airlines have been prepared for September 11th? Mary Schiavo is representing families of passengers of hijacked 9/11 planes in lawsuits against United and American Airlines.
What was really interesting is what people thought, what the government told people and how the government acted versus the real facts.
First of all, the question is not what they should have known. And I believe I can show you in just a few seconds, the question is, what did they know? And believe me, they knew a lot. Because on a September day, four planes were hijacked in Islamic Jihad. It shocked the world and will forever change the law under which we act. You think I'm talking about September 11. I'm not. I'm talking about September 12, 1970. Yes, we had an Islamic Jihad. Four airplanes were hijacked. Actually, it was supposed to be five. They were taken to Jordan. They were blown up on September 12, 1970. So in the wake of September 11, 2001, when we heard carriers and governments alike saying, oh, no one could have foreseen this, no one knew that this was coming, no one knew that there were any risks like this in the world, is absolutely false. Why? Because we know that aviation is an industry which criminals go after, terrorists seek, and hijackers prey upon to make their political statements in the world. We know this.
So September 11 was literally a repeat of a fact and an event that had occurred 30 years earlier in history.
The Bush administration has changed its official story about how prepared it was for the threat of terrorism around September 11. Unanswered question number two, what did the Bush administration know and when? Mike Ruperts from The Wilderness was one of the first independent news sources to raise the issue of government foreknowledge.
First of all, it's imperative to note that the Bush administration is absolutely and totally lying when it says, golly gee, we had no idea that aircraft could have been used as weapons of mass destruction to attack the United States. We know, of course, that Bush had clear briefings that Al-Qaeda might be hijacking airplanes, but, gee, the press forgot to tell you that on October the 24th through the 26th of 2000, the Pentagon held detailed drills practicing for an airliner being crashed into the Pentagon. The major media didn't tell you that at the G8 summit in Genoa, Italy, in July of 2001, just 2 months before the attacks, all the airspace was closed off. The summit conference area was ringed with anti-aircraft guns, and the Los Angeles Times reported clearly that Egyptian intelligence and other intelligence services were afraid that hijacked aircraft would be crashed into the G8 summit to kill President Bush. It's a total lie that the administration had no knowledge. It's also a lie that the administration had no advance warning of the attacks. Intelligence reports from France, from Germany, from Russia, from Egypt, from Jordan, all of which taken together show clearly that the United States government had been warned that in the week of September the 9th, commercial airliners would be hijacked and crashed into the World Trade Center, and that ultimately, through other warnings, that they would involve aircraft from American and United Airlines. Those are very specific warnings, and that's just what we know now to this day.
The FAA, NORAD, and the U.S. military have standard operating procedures that are routinely deployed during hijackings. Unanswered question number 3. Why wasn't the U.S. military able to intercept the hijacked planes? Nafiz Ahmed's book, The War on Freedom, is one of the most detailed investigations of 9/11.
Standard operating procedures dictate that as soon as a plane flies off course, the FAA will contact the plane and try to ask them what is going on. If there is a problem or if they cannot establish radio contact, then immediately the FAA will contact the Pentagon, who will, within a matter of minutes, a maximum of 10 minutes normally, will scramble fighter jets to intercept the civilian plane and to analyze the situation and see what is going on.
In his book, Nafiz documents a timeline of September 11th, showing how the attack should have been prevented, intercepted, or terminated. In the case of American Airlines Flight 77, which departed Dulles and was crashed into the Pentagon, the FAA lost contact at 8:50 a.m. However, fighters were not scrambled until 9:24 a.m., a delay of over 30 minutes.
Now, this sort of direct violation of standard operating procedures is inconceivable without some kind of high-level government approval. If we try to explain it by using the incompetence theory, it doesn't make sense. For example, if it was incompetent, we would expect that there would have been a normal inquiry into what went wrong. We would have expected that there would be some kind of reprimands, that certain officials would be downgraded, or they would lose their jobs, or something would have happened to correct the situation. But we find that there has been no such reprimands at all.
Unanswered question number 4. How did the administration respond to the failures of the military and intelligence agencies on 9/11? David McMichael is an ex-CIA analyst and former editor of Unclassified, the magazine of the Association of National Security Alumni.
Contrary to the situation in countries with parliamentary governments, where the responsible cabinet officer following a disaster of any sort is expected to, and almost always does, resign or go fall on his sword or something like that. In the United States, this simply doesn't happen. That's not our tradition.
Despite the breakdown under his acting leadership on September 11th, General Richard B. Myers was promoted to chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest military post in the country.
The worst the failure of intelligence, the more the intelligence system gets rewarded in terms of greater budgets and more personnel, on the grounds, of course, that they failed because they didn't have the resources. Well, that's often done in the military side as well. A sufficient military failure will usually bring on demands not so much for the sacking of the generals who participated in the failure, but in increasing their budget so that arguably it won't happen again.
In his 2003 budget, President Bush proposed an allocation of $396 billion for national defense, an increase of $48 billion over 2002, the largest single increase in military spending since the height of the Vietnam War. Unanswered question number 5. What ties, if any, did the U.S. government and intelligence agencies have with the terrorists or their supporters? Michelle Chosedowski's research at the Center for Research on Globalization has exposed links between the Bush administration and the terrorists.
It's well documented that the Taliban was supported by the Clinton administration. They would never have formed a government had it not been for U.S. military aid, which was channeled through Pakistan's inter-services intelligence. And that same organization supports the development of these terrorist organizations.
During the Soviet-Afghani War of the 1980s, Pakistan's Inner Services Intelligence Agency served as the critical link between the CIA and frontline rebel groups, one of which was Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda network.
The Al-Qaeda network is considered by the CIA to be an intelligence asset. And intelligence assets are controlled by their sponsors. That does not, of course, mean that Al-Qaeda is necessarily pro-American. It means that Al-Qaeda is being used to perform certain functions for the U.S. Intelligence apparatus. And it goes through a whole complex group of intermediaries. And that's why Pakistan's military intelligence has played a very important role in that context. It's important to understand that the man who, according to the FBI, is considered to be the so-called money man behind the 9/11 terrorists, I'm talking about the head of Pakistan's military intelligence, Mohammed Ahmad.
In the aftermath of 9/11, the FBI confirmed that General Ahmed, then head of Pakistan's ISI, had authorized a $100,000 wire transfer to Mohammed Atta, the alleged ringleader of the terrorist hijackers.
Well, this same individual was on an official visit to Washington from the 4th to the 13th of September, and he met Colin Powell, Richard Armitage, George Tenet, his counterpart. Now, the question you have to ask yourself: if the money man behind 9/11 is in Washington meeting top officials and at the same time sending money to the terrorists, doesn't it sound? What is the proximity group of this individual from the sociological point of view? Okay? He has links with the terrorists, he has links with the Bush administration. He's buddy-buddy with George Tenet, he's buddy-buddy with Mohammed Atta. Does that not suggest that senior Bush officials should at least give us some answers of what they were doing with this guy?
Unanswered question number 6. Were there plans for a war in Central Asia prior to September 11th?
This war was coming for a long time. Zbigniew Brzezinski, who had been Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, but who also worked in intelligence roles for Presidents Reagan and Bush 1, co-founder of the Trilateral Commission. He wrote a book in 1997 called The Grand Chessboard, American Primacy and Its Geostrategic Imperatives. And at three specific places in that book, he says, the key to America's control of the world in the 21st century is the control of Eurasia.
In support of his thesis, Brzezinski states, a power that dominates Eurasia would control two of the world's three most advanced and economically productive regions, and about three-fourths of the world's known energy resources.
And then he says that without an attack on the order of Pearl Harbor, or without a direct external threat, there was no way that the American people would support the imperial mobilization necessary to control Central Asia. And in this book, again, written in 1997, Brzezinski had a map of where the next world conflict was going to be. And you look at this map in the book, and it's exactly where we're fighting now.
Unanswered question number 7. Is there an underlying motive, besides the war on terror, for the U.S. military presence in Central Asia? Peter Dale Scott has written extensively about hidden agendas in U.S. foreign policy.
There are people in the administration who believe out and out that this is the American century, that it is the time for American hegemony. Both Republicans and Democrats have said we shouldn't worry so much about what our allies think.
Despite a lack of support from America's traditional allies, the Bush administration continues to pursue military action in Central Asia.
But it's, I think, pretty clear now to everybody that America has a oil geostrategy in that part of the world.
The U.S. National Energy Policy Report of 2001, authored by Vice President Dick Cheney, formerly one of America's richest and most powerful oil industry executives, demanded a priority on easing U.S. access to Persian Gulf oil supplies.
America needs to control the world oil system. And the fact that we have put U.S. troops in Georgia, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, even in Kyrgyzstan, 200 miles from the West Chinese border, all those troops there are nominally in the name of fighting the terrorists, but in reality, they have established an American presence in the great oil basin of the Caspian, and people more and more admitting that America is a serious player in that area now because of the troops we put in.
On October 6, 2002, the UK Observer reported, "The Bush administration, intimately entwined with the global oil industry, is keen to pounce on Iraq's massive untapped oil reserves, the second biggest in the world after Saudi Arabia's." Unanswered question number 8. Is there any historical evidence to suggest that the government may have used the 9/11 attacks to justify its war in Central Asia? Alex Jones is a television and radio broadcaster who has publicly questioned the Bush administration's version of what happened on September 11th.
Governments always get caught engaging in terrorist attacks against their own populations to rally them for war or for a domestic crackdown. We saw William McKinley's Navy in the 1890s blowing up their own ship in Havana Harbor as a pretext for war with the Spanish government. And that's now admitted fact. We saw Adolf Hitler blow up his own Reichstag as a pretext for martial law. Firebomb their own capital. Nazi documents have been released, now a part of historical record. Then, of course, we saw December 7th with the Japanese attacking Pearl Harbor. It's now been released that 12 days before, they had Admiral Yamamoto's communique that the Japanese were going to be attacking Pearl Harbor. One of the best examples we have of the U.S. government planning terrorist attacks against its own institutions is the North Woods document. This is a confirmed, admitted document, declassified just a few years ago.
In Body of Secrets, his best-selling expose of the National Security Agency, author James Bamford revealed that Operation Northwoods called for innocent people to be shot on American streets, for a wave of violent terrorism to be launched in Washington, D.C., and for a U.S. ship to be blown up in Guantanamo Bay, all in an effort to galvanize American public support for a war against Cuba.
And they say in the Northwoods document, casualty list in U.S. newspapers would cause a helpful wave of indignation. We certainly saw a helpful wave of indignation after September 11th.
Unanswered question number 9. How has the government's reaction to the terrorist attacks impacted the rule of law in the United States? John Judge is a member of the Washington Peace Center and has researched the post-9/11 effects on U.S. civil liberties.
As of September the 11th, the entire country went into continuity of government, which is a special government that does not rely on the elected representatives, but in fact puts a small group of people in power. When you go into a declared war or a state of national emergency, which is what they went into on September 11th, legal authorities change. Hundreds of laws allow new power and new authorities for a select few people. Decisions are made in, not by the overt government, but by now an acknowledged shadow government. That's who's making these decisions, is DOD, FEMA, and the NSA. That's who's running the country since September 11th. They're not making it very visible, but they studied conventional explosives and weapons, chemical and biological weapons, and nuclear weapons as a three-stage approach to terrorism and counterterrorism, and at each of those levels, they laid out maps that would take away more and more of the civil liberties. Eventually, when you go to martial law or into these emergency situations, they can set up detention camps and go into certain neighborhoods and round people up. The highway system, the phone system, communications, mass media, mail, all come under offices of emergency preparedness and military control once you go into these scenarios.
Unanswered question number 10. How has recent legislation, like the Patriot Act and Homeland Security Bill, affected the lives of American people? Reva Entine is an executive director of the National Lawyers Guild.
One of the greatest ironies, along with the tragedy of the Patriot Act, is that it's called Patriot. In fact, it is patriotic to defend the Constitution, and what the Patriot Act does is dismantle the Constitution.
In October 2001, the USA Patriot Act was passed into law, granting unprecedented levels of power to the Justice Department.
The greatest thing that it did is it created a new federal crime of domestic terrorism.
Under the Patriot Act, a definition of domestic terrorism is Activities that involve acts dangerous to human life, that violate the laws of the U.S. or any state, and appear to be intended to influence the policy of government by intimidation or coercion.
That's domestic terrorism. Now, intimidation or coercion are very mild words when you think about it. What about people going out on strike? What about Rosa Parks sitting in the front of the bus? What about the sit-ins at the lunch counters? Those are all intended to intimidate or coerce government institutions. And if somebody had the possibility of being injured as a result, that would have been domestic terrorism. Martin Luther King would have been a domestic terrorist. In addition to this new federal crime of domestic terrorism, some of the aspects that are quite troubling include this sneak and peek provision. So now the police can go in to your house and search your house without a warrant if you're not there. They also have this roving wiretap provision, where it used to be that they would have to get a warrant for your particular phone, and now the warrant applies to any phone that you might touch. That could be your mother's phone, that could be your friend's phone. Any phone you might touch is subject to a wiretap.
Also in the Patriot Act is the new designation of civilians as enemy combatants.
Citizens deemed enemy combatants can be held indefinitely with no charges against them, no right to see an attorney, no right to go before a judge. And this category of enemy combatant isn't even defined. So at this point, anybody who's suspect can be denied all due process rights guaranteed under the Constitution. The Homeland Security Act, which passed about a year later in November 2002, outlines in great detail the degree to which the government can now spy, listen in, record, get access to internet, library cards, bookstore records, medical records, school records, phone conversations. The Patriot Act did some of this. The Homeland Security expands it so that there's really no area of our lives that are free from government intrusion.
In conclusion, we asked our interviewees, what are your final thoughts and what can we do?
On September the 11th, four commercial airliners were hijacked. Two of them were crashed into the World Trade Center buildings in Manhattan, New York. One was crashed in Pennsylvania, and another was crashed into the Pentagon. This set off a cross in the Rubicon of human existence, a change in our lifestyle, a change in human civilization, which people are just beginning to understand about a year after the fact. That was a day that changed all of our lives forever in ways that we're just beginning to see. But the run-up to September the 11th, the historical context in which it occurred, is a much darker, much deeper political and economic story that cannot be explained away by the trite and simplistic explanations given by the administration or the news media.
Well, I don't think we yet know what happened on September the 11th, but we're being presented in the same way that we always are, with a world that we know nothing about, with people that supposedly were told hate us for reasons we can't comprehend. We're being told, for instance, that the reason that they bombed the Trade Towers and the Pentagon is that they hate us because we're a democracy, because we're a pluralist society, because we have an open society and they can't stand that, or because we're large and have a great deal of wealth. Well, if that's the case, why aren't they bombing Canada? Canada's a pluralist, large society, but it has a much different foreign policy, doesn't it? And so what's happened is that the American people, separated from their own history, have no idea what has been done in their name all around the world in those intervening 50 years since the end of World War II.
It was Mussolini who said it, and not only him, that war is the health of the state. In other words, in time of war, the people who govern are given typically almost free rein to do as they wish without much question. All people who govern. And remember, George Bush has said it on at least two occasions. You know, it would be so much easier if I were a dictator. I paraphrase closely. This is what the people who govern want. I mean, no one in a position of power, you know, wishes to be restrained by such things as law, you know, or constitutions or public opinion. I mean, a simple examination of history through a political science lens will tell you that. So, yes, people seize these opportunities and run with them.
Just after September 11th, there was a great deal of sympathy from Europe, from Russia, from everyone. And at that time, the Bush administration was able to pursue a variety of international policies that had previously been vehemently rejected by its own allies. What's happening now is that as the United States continues with the war on terror, including the upcoming imminent invasion of Iraq, threats against Saudi Arabia, threats against Iran, threats against many, many countries around the world, which happen to be of strategic interest to the United States, the US allies have grown increasingly worried about US policy, which is basically very unilateral and is based on a lack of consultation with its allies. So I think public opinion is now beginning to go back to the pre-September 11th stage of hostility towards US policy.
I like to quote John Adams, who I think put his nail on the head. He said, it's the established order of things that whenever a nation rises to such a height of power that it loses its wisdom and moderation, it will in the end also lose its power, which will come back when its sense of moderation returns. Now, he was talking about Great Britain. But what was true of Britain then, and I think he was absolutely right, and it was true of Napoleon, who went crazy, thought he could march into the heart of Russia, the heart of Asia, and it was a disaster. Hitler thought he could march into the heart of Asia, it was a disaster. We are about to march into the heart of Asia, apparently. And if we do, and it's not clear that we will, but if we did, I think that it would be seen 100 years from now as the beginning of the decline of American hegemony.
Yeah, 1 year later, in the aftermath of September 11, the Bush administration is waging a war in Iraq, in Palestine, in Afghanistan. It's a war without borders. It's a war of conquest. It responds to economic and strategic considerations. It has nothing to do with the war on terrorism. Within the United States, fundamental freedoms have been rescinded through the Patriot Act. Fundamental rights of free expression are being, again, also rescinded. People are being arrested arbitrarily for presumed links to the terrorists, when in fact the people who have ordered these arrests themselves have links to the terrorists. That's the question we have to ask. And that's what defines the criminalization of the state. It's when war criminals call the shots and decide who are criminals.
Years from now, when people analyze what happened in the wake of 9/11, it will be a very, very dark day in the history of American legislation and legal history. Because for the government to rush to protect corporations, foreign corporations and airlines and negligent wrongdoers against dead and dying and injured Americans, it will be a very dark day. And they were willing to strip them of their legal rights to do so. Shocking. And to do that in retrospect, to harm them in hindsight because of what the government and the airlines failed to do, it will be a very dark day in American legal history. And probably worst of all is the realization, and many senators have now admitted it, that they were contacted by lobbyists seeking a bailout and immunity for the negligent, not on September 12th or 13th or 14th. On September 11th, the lobbying started. While bodies were still burning, Congress was crafting protections for the negligent against the burning and dead.
Dissent has never been more critical for us to engage in with all of the energy and all of the commitment that we can muster. Because without these voices of dissent, we will not be the full society that we cherish. And the government is taking us on an illegal path, and it is our voices that must demand that they follow the Constitution and follow the law. When people say what we should be doing, people need to mobilize at the local level, at the grassroots level. There are now about 30 municipalities around the country that have passed resolutions to demand repeal of the Patriot Act. It's a very good thing for people to do. People are also negotiating at the local level with their local law enforcement that local law enforcement should not cooperate with federal law enforcement in terms of INS or the Department of Justice, the FBI. People need to encourage people to speak out, encourage their local governments to speak out.
As this system squeezes more and more people, as this system begins to dominate more and more people and displace more and more people, folks are going to be looking for answers. You need to be educated to be leaders in your area to give them those answers and how we can rebuild our society on decency and honor and things that have really made societies work in the past. We've got to start honoring creativity, honoring individuality, and not this mass-marketed slave hell that they've created. Now is the time to fight this dehumanization. Now is the time to realize you're special and you have power and you can affect change and that we're in a war for the very future of humanity. It's that important. And you're a soldier on the front line. So get out there and take it back to them 110%. You don't have a choice, ladies and gentlemen. Run your own life or somebody else is going to run it for you.
Good evening. I'd like to report on the state of our war against the American people. We're mounting a sustained campaign to crack down on every American and every person of every faith and every nation and to bring them to justice. All missions are being executed according to plan without warning or provocation. Americans are being swept up in an international dragnet. Thousands of FBI agents are on the trail of other citizens here and abroad. It has everything to do with hate and evil and murder and prejudice. America's strong, strong, strong.
Federal agents, we are armed!
What would you do if you knew all the things we know?
We
would you stand up for truth?
Or
would you turn away to? And then what if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would you stand tall and strong, or would you turn and walk away? What would you do if you knew all the things we knew? Would you stand up for truth, or would you turn away too? And then what if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would you stand tall and strong, or would you turn and walk away?
I see a message from the government. Like every day, I watch it and listen and call them all suckers. They wanted me about Osama or whatever. Picture me buying the scam, I said never. You in tune to a hard truth soldier spitting. I stay committed, gives a fuck to die, I lose commission. It's all a part of fighting devil state mind control. And all about the battle for your body, mind, and soul. And now I'm hoping you don't close your mind so they shape you. Don't forget they made us slaves, gave us AIDS and raped us. Another push season mean another war for profit. All in secret so the public never seek to stop it. The Illuminati, 666, all connected. Stole the votes, they control the race and take elections. It's the Skull and Bones Freemason Kill Committee. See the dragon getting shittier in every city.
What would you do if you
what would you do?
Knew all the things we knew? Would you stand up for truth, or would you turn away too? And then what if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would you stand tall and strong, or would you turn and walk away?
Now ask yourself, who's the one with the most to gain? On 9/11, motherfuckers couldn't stand his name. Now even niggas waving flags like they lost their mind. Everybody got opinions, but don't know the time. Cause America's been took, it's plain to see. The oldest trick in the book is making enemy. A phony evil so the government can do its dirt. And take away your freedom, lock and load, beat and search. Ain't nothing changed but more colored people locked in prison. These pigs still beat us, but it seems we forgetting. But I remember 4 September how these devils do it. Fuck
Giuliani asked Diallo how he doing. We in the streets, holler jail to the thief. Follow fuck waving flags, bring these dragons to their knees. Oil, blood, money make these killers ride cold. Suspicious suicide, people dying never told. It's all a part of playing God, so you think we need them. While being Ashcroft, take away your rights to freedom. Bear witness to the sickness of these dictators. Hope you understand the time, brother, cause it's major.
What would you do if you do?
Why my records always come the same? Keep it real, ain't no fillers, motherfucker blingin'. Mine eyes seen the gory of the coming of the beast. So every story, every word, I'm saying fuck peace. See, you could witness the Illuminati body count. Don't be surprised, these is devils that I'm talking about. You think a couple thousand lies mean shit to killers? Nigga, I swear to God, we the ones, ain't no villains. Or any other word they think to demonize a country. Ain't no terror threat unless approval rating slumping. So I'ma say it for the record, we the ones that planned it. Ain't no other country took a part, I had their hand in. Just a way to keep you scary so you think you need them. Praising Bush, why that killer take away your freedom? How many of us got discovered but ignore the symptoms? Niggas talking loud but ain't nobody saying shit. And with the Fourth Amendment on, eyes are on the first. That's why I'm spitting cyanide each and every verse. I see the Carlisle Group and Harris bank accounts. I see them plead the fifth each and every session now. And while Reichstag burns, see the public buy it. I see the profiling, see the media's compliance. War is good for business, see the vicious make a savior. Hope you understand the time, brother, cause it's major.
What would you do if you knew all the things we know? Would you stand up for truth? Or would you turn away to heaven? What if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would you stand tall and strong? Or would you turn and walk away? What would you do if you knew all the things we knew? Would you stand up for truth? Or would you turn away to heaven? What if you saw all of the things that's wrong? Would you stand tall?
How much money they've spent trying to silence good people who have put their lives on the line to fight for change.